Hannah Lazar,
Tiffany the Last, and guest pirate Azul.
And we're here with PiratePods.com at the Rock for Africa benefit concert at Cane's in San Diego with Jay Nash. Hey, Jay.
Hello. In my dreams, I heard a cry for help. You say, you don't know, boy. You don't know nothing at all. Nothing.
What's the earliest memory of writing a song for you?
Earliest memory of writing a song? It actually was kind of late in life. It was I was in college, and it was the end of my college career, and I was packing up all my clothes and packing up my room from college, and I wrote a song called "The Places You'll Go," that was, I guess, sort of loosely based on the Dr. Seuss book.
I love that.
That was the first song I wrote.
But all the places you'll go, I hear a train whistle blowing. Oh, I do, yeah, I do. And I feel my life is gonna change soon. Oh, I do, yeah, I do.
I waited, I think, a long time because I was such a fan of like Bob Dylan, who, you know, I couldn't imagine ever doing anything that would compare to the work that he did and even like approach the level. And I'm not sure that I have still, but it was very intimidating to me. And I was like, well, he's pretty much said it all. So I got to wait until I have something really imminent to say.
So you read the book from Dr. Seuss. That was one of my questions, actually.
Oh, The Places You'll Go.
Yeah, The Places That You'll Go. And so that inspired you to write music, huh?
I guess sort of loosely, my girlfriend's senior year, when we were kind of like, you know, parting ways. Not, it was an amenable split, but, you know, just kind of going off in our separate directions in life. You know, she gave me that book. I think that's a common thing in college, but it was, you know, it was a really sincere and beautiful gesture. And, you know, it was kind of, that kind of encapsulated the experience.
And what college did you go to?
I went to the University of Vermont.
Are you from the East Coast?
I am. Upstate New York, just outside of Syracuse.
So how'd you end up in San Diego?
I live in Los Angeles, but I'm a gypsy, really. No, I went to school in Vermont, and then right after school I went to New York for a year and played music there for a while, and then kind of got an itch to go be a ski bum, so I moved out to Jackson Hole and joined my friends from college who were living out there, and did that for a couple winters. And then at the end of the second winter, my manager, who I'd originally met up with in New York, had relocated to Los Angeles and kind of urged me. He's like, come on, man, you're 23 years old, you got to do something with your life, you know, get out here and do something. So that's when I came to LA intending to stay for a couple months and make a demo, and here it is, 6 years later, I'm still here.
And quite, not just the difference between weather with Vermont and Los Angeles, extreme difference there, but why, a lot of people want to leave LA, and but you've stayed for 6 years. So, what is it?
I don't know. LA has been good to me. I found an amazing community of musicians and songwriters. 5 years ago, I started booking a place called Room 5, which is a music club in Los Angeles. And I was actually there at the very beginning. It was an upstairs bar from a restaurant, a popular restaurant called Farfalla. And when the restaurant changed hands, I kind of slid in there just at the right time and convinced the owners that it needed to be this, you know, really special place for music. And I wanted to kind of buck the trend in Hollywood of, you know, I'd played a lot of places without naming names or promoters or anything like that, but I'd played a lot of places where I actually paid money to play music, you know. And I played a lot of places where the sound was crap, or a country band would go on and then I'd go into a solo acoustic set and then a death metal band would go on afterwards and then like a rap, and it was just, you know, you could call it eclectic, but like nobody was staying for the whole night, and people were like, my fans that were coming out to see me play were just consistently appalled because talent buyers were just doing whatever they could to like put people in the room and, you know, just take whatever money they could. So I really wanted to create a place where the music was consistently of really high quality. And so I've always held the policy that just like I would only book stuff that I personally would want to sit and watch for 45 minutes and be amazed by. And that and the scene that was created at the Hotel Cafe, which is another club in Hollywood by Marco and Max, has really created an amazing community of musicians and songwriters, people who, you know, from all over the country, you feel like you have a family in these other artists. So that is kind of the big part that's kept me in LA. That, and you know, I learned to surf when I first got here, and now I can't imagine living in any place that I wouldn't be able to surf.
You can't be landlocked. Once you live by the ocean, you can't be landlocked anymore. So you obviously have a passion for music. You obviously have a passion for songwriting, but you also, you know, care about causes. You're here for Rock for Africa. How did that come to be?
Basically, as it, you know, as an independent artist, you know, the cash flow can be erratic. I'll say that, you know. So I don't get to make the financial contributions all the time that I'd like to make. You know that. Maybe I would make if I was an attorney, and but so I feel like it's very important to any time I can lend a hand and help raise money for important causes like this, that, you know, it's kind of my civic duty to do it. But I think the two go together, you know, activism and creativity go together really, really well. It's, you know, generally trying to make the general philosophy of just trying to make the world a better place, you know, I think is goes hand in hand with writing music and playing it for people.
Did you study poli sci in Vermont?
Far from it. Civil engineering, actually.
Whoa. Yeah. So we noticed that you have a very busy tour ahead of you after this show.
That doesn't even reflect the beginning of the summer tour. That's really just, you know, dates here and there, and, you know, kind of getting from point A to point B, dates that were booked, like, you know, this night, for example, was something that Rose from Rock for Africa approached us back in December and asked us if we wanted to play, and of course we said yes, and, you know, so that's got me kind of just hopping all over the place, things like that. And there's been, you know, shows here in New York. There's a show next week in a music festival in Florida.
Sasquatch, right?
You're going to Sasquatch?
No, it's called Florida Music Festival. It's okay. In Orlando. But there's been a lot of that up until the beginning of July, and then I'm going to take a couple weeks off to just relax for a bit, and then it looks like the end of July is going to be the beginning of a six-week tour in the States, and then over to Europe for a month.
So how do you keep yourself healthy on a tour? Because we hear bands that have these rigorous tours, and they all have different ideas. So what is your idea of keeping yourself sane, and what are some of the rituals that you do?
Well, I think the music is the thing that keeps you healthy. I mean, if you get to play music every night, that's pretty much the greatest thing in the world. And, like, I really think that makes
it... You're not eating at Denny's every day or...
Smoking 10 packs of cigarettes.
I'm not. I've actually been touring for about 4 years now, 3.5, 4 years, since I really started going out and playing all over the place. And the first couple of years that I did it, I was like, oh yeah, I was like a kid at camp, you know, and I did, and I would just eat everything in sight, you know, like at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would consider exercising for like 2.5 or 3 weeks straight. I would drink the entire bar, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it takes its toll, you know. I think there's a lot to be learned from guys like Keith Richards.
But he's still kicking.
He's still alive. No, but he's still alive. And sure, playing. He's always partying, but he always paces himself.
And when he's falling down the hammocks.
yeah, but he never has that last little bit that's going to kill him, you know. He might go take a nap on, you know, on a park bench, but he's not hurting himself.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me.
So you don't drink the bar anymore.
I drink half the bar.
Right.
Yeah. I drink half the
fractions.
Bar. And I, you know, every couple of days I force myself to get out and go run a couple miles. Doesn't matter how crappy I feel. I just
and surf. You're surfing.
Yeah, but you can't really surf on the road. You can't surf in Omaha.
You you take your surfboard just for fun?
I have. You know, I had one of the best days that I can remember on tour in recent memory was this past fall. We played in Santa Cruz, and this girl, Kim Mayer, who's a pro surfer, happened to be at the show, and I got to talking to her and you know, saying that we wanted to go surfing the next day. And she's like, oh, I'll take you. And I thought she was totally bluffing. Wow. I thought, no way. And she took me, and she took my guitar player, who had never surfed before. You know, I'd surfed a bunch, and I was just stoked to go and check out a break that I wouldn't have known where to go, and I didn't know the local scene, and I just didn't want to get, like, vibed up. And she, like, you know, she was in there, and she took us out, and it was, like, a great day. This big swell had moved in, and it was, like, glass calm, like, totally blue skies, and, like, you know, like, 5-foot sets. It was just, like, gorgeous, gorgeous. And she got my friend Bart Ryan, who was playing guitar on that tour, up on a surfboard. It was pretty, pretty amazing. And just surfed for about 4 hours and then headed up the road to San Francisco and played a gig. It was
cool.
Pretty great day.
Yeah.
I can't imagine surfing with a pro surfer. I think when I got up on a surfboard the first time, it was because someone that had surfed for 30 years had shown me how to do it. Mm-hmm. But it takes that. It takes that old patience. And, you know, that's cool that she took the time to do that with you guys. And
She was pretty amazing. She was as patient as, you know, as anyone could be. I mean, like I said, she was hanging out with Bart and get him going. And I was jealous because he was getting all the attention.
Yeah. Pretty beautiful pro surfer. I can't swim.
I was trying to figure out how to play it. It was like, well, should I pretend like I can't surf so she comes over and helps me?
Cramp!
I have tried to surf, and the only thing that goes through my head is burritos. I'm out there on that surfboard, and I'm like, when am I going to get a burrito? When am I going to get a burrito? Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburgers?
I could eat cheeseburgers all the time.
No cheeseburgers for us all.
No cheeseburgers.
No?
Don't eat me.
No?
But
Not even from, like, In-N-Out? Good, like...
Never.
Grilled cheese.
Never have been.
So delicious.
No.
Juicy.
Maybe it's because I don't surf. I don't know.
Maybe that's it. You haven't worked
cheeseburgers and surfing. You're missing out of the two, like, finest pleasures
Sounds
that I'm
like
aware
paradise.
Of on this planet.
Since you're living in L.A., I was wondering, have you ever thought about being an actor?
No, not really.
So there's no movie you'd like to star in or anything like that?
I mean, if somebody, if, like...
You don't want to be a pirate in Pirates of the Caribbean 4?
Hey, you know, I'd do it. I wouldn't turn it down, but... I think that, like, the secret to acting is, like, it should be really easy, you know? And I've seen a lot of people come to L.A., like, wanting desperately to be actors. And that's, I just feel like that's a really uncomfortable situation to be in. It's, like, it's tough enough to be, like, you know, an aspiring musician, artist, you know, to be writing songs and trying to find people to listen to them. I think that, like, acting just seems like it would be even harder, you know, like, you have this thing that you want to do, but you need a whole cast and crew and everything to do it, unless you do like a one-man show. It just seems like it's, you know, music has always been the thing that called me, so.
And what about if you could work with the director to do a soundtrack?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously, like, the first, I actually did score a movie, actually, a couple years ago. But I don't know if I'm necessarily. I'd love to work with Wes Anderson, actually. I think that's like Wes Anderson or what was the other guy? Paul Thomas Anderson. There Will Be Blood. Is it Paul?
Yeah.
Is it Paul Thomas Anderson?
And Magnolia.
I'm totally spacing.
I'm drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. Either those guys are both fantastic.
Yeah.
There's probably others. I like, you know, just kind of like the quirky movies that expose like the subtleties of life, you know, that we're all thinking at one point and then it happens on a screen in front of you and you're in the dark with 150 strangers. Like, I like to participate in that. I think that's why it's so appealing to have your music and TV and film, is it's just like, it's an extremely connective medium.
Mm-hmm. What was the film that you wrote score for?
It was just a tiny little movie that this guy, Ben Wagner, made a few years ago called Southbounders, and it was about people hiking up the, or hiking down the Appalachian Trail. It's kind of like a post-adolescent self-discovery kind of story. And it was an interesting experience because we talked about it. He told me he was going to make the movie. I was like, oh, I'd love to score it. That'd be great. And I did a couple little cues that he used like while he was first like editing the movie, just like literally like 3 minutes of music, and he put it in a bunch of different places. He's like, yeah, well, I really want you to finish scoring the movie. And I was like, okay, well, that sounds great. You know, how long do I have? And he's like, well, you know, this was in probably early March. He's like, well, you know, I think we have until the middle of June to get everything done. And then I started kind of like working on it, but it was the back burner. And a couple of days later, he said, well, the film got into the LA Film Festival. So we've got 3 weeks to finish everything.
Wow.
And I'd never scored a film before. And the whole process of syncing the music to the film and all that, I like the technical process, I didn't really have a handle on, but it was really fun because it was just wrote all this music, you know, probably 90 minutes worth of music in a really short period of time and recorded it all. And it ended up being like a really kind of cool little body of work, you know. It forced me to make an instrumental record, which is kind of fun.
Jay, thank you so much for meeting with us. It was so nice talking with you and taking the time with us. And at the end of all of our interviews, we ask all of our folks to make fools of themselves and give us a pirate impression.
Oh, I got a pirate joke.
Oh, good.
It might take about 90 seconds.
But that's fine.
You've probably been told on this. So there's a pirate captain, and whenever he would go into battle, he would say to his first mate, he'd say, "Arr, matey, bring me red shirt." And his first mate would be like, you know, "Captain, why do you always wear your red shirt when, you know, you go into battle?" It's like, "So me mates won't see the stains of me blood on me shirt, so that they'll fight on to the death." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, that's pretty good philosophy." And so, you know, they go through many battles and on. And then one day, the pirate captain is looking over the horizon through his scope, and he sees the entire Spanish Armada coming up over the horizon. And he says to the first mate, "Arr, matey, bring me brown pants."
That's a good one. We haven't heard that one before. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
You threw it all away, you say. What do you mean by that? It's all over now, you say. When did it begin? Gambled with my heart, and I'm bankrupt on tears. I can't tell you now.